Hello and welcome to another episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. Today I was going to speak about a completely different topic, but things have changed last week when I got on some calls with some of you. And yeah, what I want to say and share with you is that I'm always in awe at how raw and vulnerable in your sharing you are when you come on calls. And I so deeply honor you for that. And someone in particular touched my heart last week. She came on the call with so much pain and her tears were flowing like rivers. And she felt so lonely. And yet, all I could see was her incredible strength and the power of her heart. And by the end of the call, she felt that too. And all of this brought home to me more than ever the reason why I'm here, why I'm doing this, why I am creating every episode, why I'm in this room very early in the morning recording, why I spend hours every week working with this, why I do this work in general. And yes, I am of course here to share my experience with my own mother. Yes, I am here to offer you tools to deal with your relationship with your mother, and also to work with the trauma that came from experiencing maternal narcissism in your life. I'm here to give you tips to set boundaries and deal with relatives and so on. So I, of course, that's all part of why I'm here. But I'm also here to remind you how amazing you are, to show you that there is a way out of all the pain you're going through, to reflect back to you how incredibly strong you are to have been through it all and still be here. I mean, you're listening to this, you're still looking for the change, you're still working with yourself. You are here. That takes so much strength, so much bravery. You're looking to ways to feel joy again, and I get that. And I'm here to remind you how amazing your heart is and how capable you are. You that joy is there for you already. How lovable you are right now, exactly as you are, changing absolutely nothing about you. So today I'm speaking to those of you who feel like you have already been through so much pain and it feels like it's too much to take. It feels like an ever-ending story of pain, and what you're experiencing every day seems to be one more wave of it, and you feel like that's it. You just can't take any more of this. Like your mother still behaves in all the ways that hurt, your family still doesn't get all that you're suffering, and maybe because of that they might get confrontational with you, criticize you or label you, and you're feeling everything that's happening around you like a punch in the stomach, and your life is a mess as a result of that. That's who I'm speaking to today. And if it seems like a train is going, like your life is like a train going at full speed towards disaster and you have no idea where the brakes are, I get it. I've had years of feeling like that. All of that I've just said, I've had years of feeling like that. And also I want to say to you, because there's no point in me lying to you, that days like that still come. Days when I feel crushed by it all and there seem to be no light at the end of the tunnel, those days still come. And yeah, it's important to say that, because sometimes it's easy to think that because I'm here talking to you that I got all my shit sorted, that everything is 100% wonderful for me 24/7 in my life, but that's not how it works. This is not like a short-term path that you're walking, that I'm walking. This is like a lifelong path. We're always devoting every moment, every action, every breath to open up more, to get more joy, to feel more, to be more real and to experience life. And so that's lifelong and it doesn't end. But that's a good thing, because there's no limit to how much joy and love and life you can experience and feel, because there's no end to this work. So for those of you that are feeling like that, there are three things I want you to know right now. First of all, I want you to know that you're not alone. So many women are going through some version of the same right now. And I know, because I talk to them every day. I get your emails, messages, I get your calls. You are not alone. There's so many are feeling like that every day. And they would, and when you talk, when we're going to have the community going a little bit more, as in the, when the circles are going to start next year, you're going to get sharing together. Those of you who will come on the circles will get to share together, and you'll get to see how many women are actually feeling the same. Second, I want you to hear that I see your courage. It is brave. It's a brave thing to feel, you know. It is so much easier, at least on a surface level, to suppress and distract. And society offers us ample opportunities to do just that. So we have plenty of excuses to go with that. So it is really brave to feel. It is really brave to recognize the pain, to face it, to let the tears flow, to know that change is needed, to feel the force of that pain that you're feeling that's inside you, and from it, from that pain, generate the change necessary. Because that pain can be fuel. Once you're going with it, once you're feeling it, rather than numbing it or distracting it or suppressing it, when you let it come out and you feel it, that becomes fuel for change. So you're so brave and courageous, and I see that. And the third thing I want to remind you is that you are safe here. What we are creating here together is a safe space. That's really important. I want you to hear that. I know that women's circles are not there yet, but it is a community. This place is a community already. And you are safe to share, you're safe to reach out. And when you do that, you're supporting not only yourself, but also all the others listening in. That's why this is a community. So every time you ask a question, you share, you reach out with your experience. I know you do that with me. You're sending me an email or a comment or a message, but that goes in the community through this podcast. And so many other women listen to the message, listen to your question through my episodes. And that way, we're all supporting each other. And nothing you share is silly. That's another thing I want to say. And I receive your shares and questions with gratitude because of that, because of the support that it is for the entire community. And I honor you for that. So yeah, I wanted to say these three things. That you're not alone. That I see your courage. And that every share is a support to the community. And you're safe in your shares in here. So with that said, today I want to share with you some potent tools to support you in dealing with those intense and overwhelming emotions that we spoke about. You know, when you're feeling like it's really too much, that you've been through enough, that you've been through so much, and these emotions get triggered. There's a wave of anxiety that feels so strong. There's waves of feeling not enough that feel so strong and believable as well. There's like, you find it so hard to sleep at night because of that. You find it hard to function, to go to work, to do the things you need to do, to show up with your kids because of those waves. Those emotions can be very intense and overwhelming sometimes. And they come up when you get triggered. Many of you said to me in different calls and stuff, oh, my mother knows exactly how to press all those points in me. She knows exactly how to trigger all of that in me. like she says the right thing at the right, as in the wrong thing at the wrong time, obviously, but the right thing at the right time to trigger all of those things. And I know she does. I get that. She knows really well how to trigger you and get the response she wants. After all, she trained you that way. Don't forget that, you know. She's a professional at it. Since you were a child, she trained your system to respond to all these triggers. But have you noticed, so I want to ask you this, a moment for you to feel into it and reflect on this. Have you noticed how also others, so not just your mother, but other people and also events can trigger similar responses in you? For example, your mother might be an absolute pro and making you feel guilty. But where else in your life does guilt come up? You know, do you feel guilty towards your children, towards your partner, towards co-workers? Do you feel guilty if you don't clean the house? Do you feel guilty? You know, where else in your life do you feel guilty? Your mother might easily trigger anxiety in you with what she says and does. But when else does anxiety come up for you? And the same can be said for shame, inadequacy, frustration, and so on. And this reflection is not to say that there's something wrong with you that has nothing to do with your mother. I'm not trying to make you feel worse about yourself, not at all. This is the opposite. It's actually to say that with the childhood experiences you've been through, because that's where it all started, all these triggers that you're feeling today, all these emotions that are coming up, that's where they come from. There are trigger responses set within your system. So no matter where you go or what you do, these triggers will follow you unless you understand them, unless you start working with that specifically. And I'm speaking from experience here also, because this all became very apparent to me after going No Contact. Before going No Contact, I had put a lot of distance between myself and my mother, living in two different countries. And still, triggers were there, but I was still going, well, but I'm still talking to her, she's still on the phone to me, she's still sending me things and letters and whatever, and emails and messages and comments, blah, blah, blah. So like, that's where the triggers are there. But after I went No Contact, I was still getting triggered in similar ways. So like, the anxiety is still there, the guilt is still there, the feeling of being absolutely not enough and crap at everything I do and unable to ever do anything positive in my life is still there. So what's the story with that? I mean, I've eliminated the main cause of all these triggers. And by saying that, I am not suggesting that you should be able to stay in the presence of very triggering people like your mother and be fine. I'm still No Contact. That didn't make a difference for me in that sense. This is not about how to deal with the toxic people in your life. It is all about understanding your inner world so that you can truly break free from the cycle of pain you've been carrying inside yourself. And yes, sometimes the distance, the no contact, the space, the limited contact, whatever, and all the boundaries you set are there to support you get that space so that you can actually start feeling into what triggers are there for you. And you're in a safer environment and space to work with it. So the two things are obviously connected. Dr. Gabor Mate explains it like this, and I'm not going to quote him word by word, but the concept is this. People and circumstances trigger us, but who has the gunpowder? You know, they can trigger us, but who has the ammunition? Who has the gunpowder? And that is within us. So the explosive powder that gets triggered is actually inside. They can trigger as much as they want, but if we don't have that gunpowder inside, we don't get triggered. Again, that is not because you're faulty or broken. This is not because you have a problem because you have that ammunition inside of yourself. That is simply the result of the trauma you have experienced. So this is not your fault. None of this is your fault. But you do have, however, the capacity to break free from this. And that choice is only yours. So it's not your fault what happened to you. Nothing that has happened to you is your fault. You've done your best in every single moment of your life. And you've dealt with it brilliantly. Like, I mean, every strategy, every coping mechanism that saved your life. So, I mean, deep bows to those parts of you that have kept you going and kept you living through all of it. So, but now you have a choice. You have that choice to break free from all of that. And how can we do that? How can we break free from all that pain and suffering? I mean, we can suppress it. We can pretend it's not there. We can keep creating strategies to survive. We can still lock it all inside. We can distract in many different ways from it. The thing is, when we do all of that, it will always find a way back to the surface until we truly understand it. I'm going to use a metaphor to explain this a little bit. I have plenty of amazing t-shirts in my house because I have plenty of beautiful pets, like cats and dogs and horses and you name it. I have a lot of pets. But observing them, animals are easier because they don't have the same stories that we have. They don't have the programming. In general, they're like way more close to like the nature that we would be without all of the other layers. And so they can be great teachers. So if you have a dog, you know how it works. But I have a dog that is very, very anxious. He has always been very anxious since we got him. And he barks every time the doorbell rings. And that's because he perceives a danger on the other side. And that's okay. So I can try to suppress his response, his behavior, by shouting at him. I could beat him. I don't. Of course I don't. I never would, but I'm just using this as an example. I could beat him. I could get violent. Or I could even train him in a very non-violent way to be quiet and still when the doorbell rings. You know, I can teach him to be still and insist that there's nothing to worry about. But has any of that taken his anxiety away? No. He can sit still, but you notice that there's still like a shake. All of this will actually make him more and more anxious when the doorbell rings. So even if his outer behavior seems like to have changed, what happens in his inner world is the same. Even if the dog is quiet and still, the anxiety is still there. So what's going to happen is that he will end up biting someone at some point, seemingly out of the blue. But that's not out of the blue. That's the anxiety that just has to come out some way, somehow. And it's going to come out in an uncontrolled manner when that gets triggered too much. So he can suppress it, doing what I'm telling him to do until the point where he can't anymore. A trigger is too big and he's going to do something about it, like bite someone. Instead, if I seek to understand why the dog barks, I might not know what was the cause of the anxiety in the first place, because, like, I mean, the dog can't tell me. But if I remain calm, if I introduce the dog to who's at the door every time, if I remain grounded and with patience, I can retrain his response. So in the same way, that's what we do to ourselves. It's like our nervous system is the little puppy that wants to be that is anxious, is worried, has some, like, is feeling all these things, and we're trying to suppress it, we're trying to stop it, we're trying to force it into be still and quiet, we're trying to force it to do things that don't feel right, because that feeling is still there bubbling. You know, suppress, distract, try to fix your responses to triggers as if they were broken parts of yourself that you just need to do something about. That's not the approach. And here is where I want to give you like an overview of how we can, instead of going at it by distracting, suppressing, and fixing in a really loving retraining of your system, because your system has been trained to respond to triggers from a very young age in a certain way. And so what we need to do is retrain that. And there are ways to do that. I'm going to talk about four ways. This is an overview because each one of these ways we could talk about forever. And the best way actually to work with this is experiential. So that's what we do in the 10 weeks program, in the one-on-one program. That's what we do. We're going to do within the groups. So the first way is, and they're not first, second, third, and fourth, because there's an order how to go about this. This is very personal. You can start one way or you can start another. They all complement each other, however. So the more of this you can do, the better, for sure. So the first way is by becoming aware of those triggers. That's actually like really important, to ask yourself, why am I reacting like this? You know, when you start becoming aware that certain things trigger you, you start noting the connection between whatever events, whatever people, whatever things they say or do that causes that emotion to come up for you. Beginning to work with that, beginning to start making those links, it's really key, because we can have waves that just come and we don't know where the hell they came from. It's like, I was fine all day, and then all of a sudden, bang, I get hit by this wave of anxiety. Like, where the hell did that come from? Now, there are times in this work that waves of emotions get released, and I'm not saying that you always have to go digging in to try and figure where that came from, but if you can make the links, like I've had that sometimes, I can be really okay and I can have a very good day, and then it just hits me really hard, like a real sense of feeling unsafe and very anxious. And then maybe it's because I read something online, or someone said something to me that didn't seem like that stronger, but it just really got there and it triggered that. So it's like, oh, okay, that's the thing, that I get that. So why am I reacting like this? You can ask yourself, what has triggered this response in me? Another question that is really interesting to ask yourself and reflect on is, when have I started reacting like this to such event? When did that start? Because you haven't always been like that. That's part of the programming. That's part of what your mother told you. That's part of the labels. Oh, you've always been that way. Or that's just how you react to things. Or that's just who you are. It's not. There's a point where you've started reacting like this to things or to people. So when have I started? And just investigate gently, without judgment. There is no right or wrong here. It's purely about bringing awareness, and that awareness is key. So gently, lovingly, start asking yourself, as if you would ask a little child, you know, why are you feeling that way? Why are you reacting like that? What's brought that up in you? Not because it's wrong. You're okay with how you're reacting. It's totally fine to feel like that right now. But why? I just want to know why, so that I can understand you better, so that I can feel you better. That's the dialogue you want to have with yourself, with the part of yourself that feels that way. And that's really, really, really important. That's like one of the key tools to start knowing yourself fully and really intimately. The second thing that you can do is create an outer container. I have mentioned that before in other episodes. This is a safe space. An outer container is a safe space for you. And why is this important? Because feeling safe is something we never feel when we have been through trauma. So many of you that come on calls and share with me are talking about the feeling of safety, that they're really looking for that. They're looking for that feeling of safety. And this was a massive thing for me to realize a few years ago. When I realized I never felt safe, I remember doing all this work where they were asking me what I wanted more than anything else in the world. And I was like, oh, I want to be happy and I want to be in love and I want to have such and such things, and I want to have a house, my own place, and this and that and whatever. Yes, of course, it's not that I didn't want those things, but those were layers and they're way more on the surface. At the core of it, I wanted to feel safe. That's all I wanted, to feel safe, because I didn't know, I never felt safe. It was the thing that I craved the most. And no matter where I was or with who I was, I never felt truly safe. Outside, in my home, in my bed even. And even when I felt kind of relaxed to some degree, I was still on alert. You know, what I called relaxed is still like hovering above the bed, like a few inches with tension. It's like sleeping with one eye open at all time and always watching around the corner or behind you for whatever threat, not like physically, but my system was always like that. So creating a feeling of safety in the system is important, and an outer container supports that, because your system is trained that you're never safe, because you haven't felt safe. Like, I mean, with a mother that treats you like she did and probably still does, it's very natural not to feel safe. With a narcissistic family dynamic, is very natural not to feel safe. So a safe container is important. And it can, of course, be created with a therapist, with a mentor, of a coach, whatever guide you have, a support group, the women's circle. This is a very important element. So that creates a safe container. As I said earlier, you're safe here to share. This is a safe container. But it's also important to create a safe container that you can easily access all the time, because the safe container you have with your group or with your therapist, that is just a portion of your day. That's like, okay, you go to your therapist for an hour, you speak to me for an hour, you speak to your women's group for like an hour or two, but then that's done. You need to bring home a little bit of that and create a safe container that is accessible to you more than just an hour per week to retrain your system. So that can be a space in your home if it's possible. If that's not possible at all, so if you don't have anywhere in your living environment where you can have, where you can create a safe space, that is important information for you to get. It's not like something to be beating yourself up about. It's just potent information. Maybe, and I don't know you, so I'm just saying it generically, and there's so many different reasons why that could be, but maybe a change of settings is actually necessary for you if you can't find any little corner of your environment where you can create a safe space. Or maybe you need to train yourself more into speaking your needs to those that are around you. Or maybe there's a lot of decluttering to do. I know I've had to do that. Like, I didn't have a physical space that could be turned into somewhere safe for me. And so I had to get rid of stuff to make that space. Or maybe it's a thing of boundaries. People keep coming in into your space, and so you need to set more boundaries. So there can be different things, but knowing that when you get that information, okay, it's not possible for me to have a safe space in my home, that's information, and you can work with that. But if it is possible, creating a safe space for yourself in your home is about creating an area where you can comfortably be and feel at ease. And to do that, you can use your senses. Your senses are really important for that, because we get triggered a lot through the senses. So you can use your senses to bring about a sense of ease and calm. like some scents, for example, that you can choose, a music that works for you, that brings about that feeling. You can make it like your touch, so like having comfy pillows and blankets that feel really good to touch, images that will bring peace and calm for you, and nice tasting teas or whatever that is, and so on. So you can use your senses, you can bring your senses in and create this space that is just a nest, that is like fully conducive for your system. And this is going to be very personal to you, like it's not going to look the same for two people. But there are, however, like some ideas and guidelines. So I have a free ebook that is available for you. You can download it. There's the link in the description of this episode. I know in the title I called it a quick guide to create a sacred space for yourself. But I it nearly feels like I should change the title to create a safe space. Maybe I'll do it. I'll see. But that's the point of that. Sacred space, it's a safe space, because a space where your system can feel that little bit safer, if not totally safe. It's not going to be magic that all of a sudden you go from total unsafety to complete calm and ease, maybe, but more often than not it's going to be just a little bit safer, that little bit. But that little bit, the nudge, is what starts retraining the system into opening a little bit more to that feeling, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. So that's why that's sacred. Very, very sacred. The third tool, the third part of this, is to create an inner container. So we've spoken about another container. We went layers. So you have your safe container with maybe your therapist or your coach or your group, which is like an hour or two every week. Then you have a safe outer container in your home, so you can access that more often. And then you create your inner container. That's with you all the time. That's why this is key. If you're not in your therapist room, or if you're not in your sacred space at home, but this inner container, it's coming with you all the time. And it's your body. And here on this topic, we could do 1,000 episodes or more, because it's vast and wonderful exploration. There's so much. I mean, there's no limits to where you can go with this. But I want to give you an overview of what is a key part of what we work on during the 10 weeks program. Actually, we work a lot with this, because that's really, really important. When you work with me, when we're working in this program, I don't want you to be needing me to feel good. The work is all about making you 100% independent, actually, and able to continue the work even when the program is over by yourself, because you have all the tools, which I'm not inviting you to do this alone. That's not the point. But it's like we want a child to be able to, you know, I want my daughters when they grow up to be independent and be able to create their own life with their own tools. And that's the same. That's the same sort of thing. So we work a lot on that. The inner container is essential, is an essential part of this. So how can you get in touch with your body as a potent container for your emotions? There are different ways that this can happen. And again, they all work together, but I'm just separating them to give you an idea. And the more you play with this, the more you get to know what works for you and what doesn't, because we're all different. Again, there's no same way exact that works for two people the same. So the first path is your breath. There are breathing techniques, tons of breathing techniques, and they have a space, and they are very, very useful. It is important to actually learn techniques to then play without the techniques. But if you know some breathing techniques, they are helpful for sure to start with. Yet, even simply being with your breath following your breath from your nose to your belly and back again for a few minutes every day, it's a very, very powerful practice. And I know you might tell me, like, my breath doesn't go beyond my throat. I mean, it's never gonna get to my belly. I'm that closed up. That's fair enough. I have been there plenty of times where it doesn't want to go anywhere beyond the very upper part of my body. That's okay. That's where you watch your breath. You watch your breath wherever it is. The key here is not to force, not to push, is to be with what's available and then nudge a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, and you'll be surprised how your body can actually open, how your body still has the capacity to open. It just needs a little bit of time and love. So breath is one path. Another one is touch. You can hug yourself really tight or softly. I prefer, I really like touch, big tight hug of myself when I'm in like a really overwhelming emotional state that I'm like, that feels way too much to bear, feels like I'm gonna be crushed. That big strong hug of myself really collects it all and makes my container, my body feels like, yes, it's there, and I can hold all of that emotionality because this container is strong and powerful. So a hug for yourself, tapping. I know tapping works, tapping on your body. Many of you have mentioned that, and it is a really good technique to feel the body, to feel that container. You can squeeze your muscles, like along your arms, for example, or along your legs, or your hands and your feet, and kind of like just give it a squeeze, or massage. Massage your hands, massage your feet. Another way to contact your body by touch is you can place a hand on your heart and a hand on your belly. And actually, that's a really good support for your breath when you're practicing feeling into your breath. If you have a hand on your heart and a hand on your belly, you can feel your breath as it goes down all the way to your heart and then progressively down to your belly. It's like the touch can guide the breath. The breath, the two things can support each other. Now, I know that for some of you, touch might be a challenge. I know some of you have mentioned that to me, and I have been through that. I have been through sexual abuse when I was a child. So for me, for a long time, touch didn't seem to be an option at first. It wasn't something that relaxed me, but it actually tensed me. So it has taken me some time and a lot of being kind to myself, and also the right guidance. Sometimes you need guidance from mentors that have been there and they know how that feels and they have a wider experience. So that has supported me, mentors I trusted. But now touch is one of my favorite allies. As I said, like that big hug, I love the squeezing of the muscles. I'm placing my hand on my heart and my hand on my belly all the time when I'm practicing. So touch has become one of my favorite. So if you are feeling like, oh, that's just really not for me, what I want to say is that that can be worked with very lovingly. And you'll be surprised at how your body can open up to that once a little bit of safety comes in. So another path to get in touch with your body is movement. And by this, I'm not talking about choreographed movement or movement for a purpose, like, you know, yoga, that everyone has to do the same positions and they need to be done to perfection, because otherwise you're looking at the person to your right or to your left and they're doing it better than you and oh my god. Or dancing because you just want to look perfect when you dance with fancy clothes and all of that. That's not what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about movement, I'm talking about movement like no one is up watching you at all. So you can really feel free to move however your body calls. and different ways of movements. Yes, shake is one that works really well, just simply bouncing on the spot up and down. Dancing, but dancing like no one is watching you. Like, if it looks clumsy, if it looks messy, if it looks whatever it looks, it doesn't matter. It's the feeling on the inside that you're looking for, is that feeling of your body moving. That connection between you and your body that you're looking for is not the aesthetics of it. So movement, like your body feels like moving. So it's not dancing, it's not anything. It's just simply moving like your body feels. Or even vigorous exercise. That can actually be a path to connect with your body. Again, when it's not done because you want to look better, you want to look fitter, you want to look tighter, but because you are going for the experience, for the grunt, the growl of it, and that supports you connecting with your body. And it moves energy. So that's the movement part. And then the last thing about, the last path to connect with your body is the voice, your voice. That's a really important pathway, and one that for many of us has been locked. I know when I'm working with you on calls and stuff, and I know from my own experience, when I say make sounds, express your voice, that very often is extremely challenging. And it has been for me as well, a lot challenging to let sound come out. Because, I mean, when were we safe in expressing and talking freely? There's so many different ways that has been programmed in our system that we're not safe to speak and to make sounds, messy sounds. I mean, as a child, we would have been told to shut up. That was noisy, that was annoying. I remember singing when I was like a little kid. I used to sing. I had watched The Little Mermaid cartoon, and I was very small at the time. And so I used to sing thinking I was The Little Mermaid. Obviously, what was coming out must have been horrendous to be listening to, but that doesn't matter. And I remember being told to shut up because that was horrible and I shouldn't do that and it was annoying everyone, and like my throat just went, okay, I'm gonna close up forever after this. So we've all been through some kind of that. So expressing through sound, and this can go with your breath practice, because sometimes it can be helpful when we're breathing in and then breathing out, releasing sounds through the mouth that just wants to come. Or in the movement, you know, when you're doing whatever type of movements, there might be sound that wants to come up, especially like, you know, if you're doing like some vigorous exercise that can bring growl there, or whatever that is for you. So the voice, it's important. And or we can do something a little bit more just dedicated to that, like the Om chanting. That's a really potent expression of the voice. And because, yeah, it's the Om chanting, sometimes that feels safer at the beginning, especially, than just express random sounds that make us feel silly, or, you know, it's just, there's more blocks when we go for random sounds. So the Om really opens up the central channel of the body with the vibration of it. So that's really good. Humming sounds are very good, like and tuning is when you just go with vowels and you just express your voice, making shapes with your mouth and letting vowel sounds coming out. And there's no right or wrong. There's no way to do that is better than others. It's purely expressing sound. So to get in contact, so to recap, to get in contact with your body, which is creating the inner container, you can use your breath, touch, movement, and voice. The last tool I want to share with you, so the fourth thing that you can do to support you in retraining your system and also in in coping with the strong emotions that do come up when you get triggered. So all of these are brilliant ways to train your system. So if you do them when you're feeling okay, you practice these things when you're feeling okay, you're going to train your system more and more. And you're going to see the difference, because what's going to happen is that when you are in the situations that would have been really challenging for you, they're a little bit less challenging. And you're like, oh, how is that a little bit less challenging? I feel like I can cope with this now. It's all down to the training of your system that you've been doing, going through all of this that we've been talking about. But also there are ways that when you are feeling overwhelmed, when you're feeling strong emotions, when you are feeling like, oh my God, I just can't cope with this anymore, because you've trained, if you go to these tools, they'll help you. Like if you go to your breath when you're in a moment of real deep panic and anxiety, that settles the system. Or touch, or if you just go to your safe space after you've been through a conflict or something really has upset you, you can be safer to express your emotions and let them be moved through and such. So they work both ways. So the last tool I want to share with you today is nature. Nature is a potent ally. Being in nature is a very simple yet extremely effective tool of self-regulation, because our neurons mirror our surroundings. So if we are in a noisy, chaotic environment most of the time, it is a lot harder to bring the nervous system to a calmer state. But when we can be in a place that is calm and that vibrates in the same way that our body does, because our body is nature, then regulation happens. So like, I know you probably heard this before, going to hug a tree, like the bigger the better, really works. It actually really, really, really works. It's not just a cheesy lot of nonsense. It really works. And use your touch. You see how the other tools come into this. Like when you're hugging a tree, you're using your touch, you're feeling the texture, you're feeling the contact, or you could, I don't know, if you're somewhere like on a beach, you can feel the sand through your hands or under your feet. So you can use your touch when you're in nature, the same as way as you would use your touch on your own body. You can touch what's nature, what nature is around you, but that just brings you back in your body and connects you with nature, and regulation happens. Lying on the grass, gazing up at the sky, green and blues are very calming colors, and that's nature is full of them. So that's really supportive. Walking in nature, it's an amazing way. I mean, it's so simple, but not walking to go somewhere or to achieve your goal of daily steps with maybe a podcast or music blaring in your earphones. That's another type of practice, and that's not for this. Walking to savor the moment. Walking not to go places, but walking to walk. Walking to feel each step, to feel the movement. Every time your foot touches the ground comes up and touches you, and there's like this connection and communication between you and the earth. That's what grounds you and what brings you home. In that, if you can walk barefoot, if where you are that's available for you, that's wonderful, because that's a great way to slow down your steps and feel into each one. And you don't have to go for kilometers. Like just a few steps of that can literally reset the system. If it's available and safe around where you live, swimming in a river or a lake or the ocean, so whatever wild waters that are available, that's another really potent tool to reset the system, and it's really supportive. So in general, being in nature is a potent tool. So let's recap for a second. As we said, the triggers are within you. Yes, there's toxic people that trigger you, and it doesn't mean you need to live with them or be with them or be in contact with them, but it's important to understand that the ammunitions are within you. So The outside can set it off, but the gunpowder is within you. And so to break free from these triggers and get more and more to be yourself, and being able to regulate whatever emotions are coming, which means, what does regulating mean? It means that we're turning this emotion into something that crashes, like from something that crashes us and overwhelms us in ways that we can't cope with, into like amazing fuel that sustains our life, actually becomes like pure fuel, pure energy, pure life force that we can use to create the life we want. So to be able to do that, there are four ways that you can do that. And one is bringing awareness to the triggers and lovingly investigate. Why am I feeling this way? Why am I reacting this way? Two is creating an outer container, so a safe space for yourself to go where you can relax a little bit, where you can find ease. Three, get in contact with your body as an inner container through breath, touch, movement, and voice, different paths where that can bring you there. And four, you can go into nature and allow your system to naturally regulate. So those are all ways that you can work with. You can start from now. I know I just gave you an overview. Again, there's a lot that can be said, but at the same time, they're pretty simple things to implement in your daily life. And the one thing I'm going to say is that none of this is your fault. As I mentioned, none of what you're feeling is your fault. None of what has happened to you is your fault. However, the choice is yours. You know, choosing to implement even one of these things can make a huge difference. I would not be where I am today if I didn't do some of this regularly, like consistently, like all the time, like my life depended on it, because it did. It really did. Your life depends on it. Your life depends on these choices. On choosing you, on choosing to do the right things because you're a good person, the right things in terms of the things that work, the things that actually can open up a possibility to feeling better, open up to a different kind of life, a life that is yours, a life that feels good, a life that is full of joy, a life that is the life you deserve. The life you deserve. So I'm very passionate about this because I know it works. I really know it works. I've seen it for myself, in my life, in my experience, and I keep seeing it with the women that I work with, and every time, again, as I said at the beginning, it reminds me why I'm here. Because I really believe in you, and I really believe that you can turn your life around. Like I did. So with that said, I want to remind you that the free guide to create your sacred safe space, it's available in the description of the video. You can go and download that. And also there's my email address there, so you can reach out, share your experiences. The waiting list for the Women's Circles starting next year in January, it's open. And so again, you can email me, contact me if you're interested, or you can go on the website. There's the application form there. You can fill that there. So, with that said, I'm going to say bye for now and send you lots of love.